I'm Brian McCreath, and I'm sitting in the Kuzovitsky Music Shed with Moritz Gnon, the assistant conductor of the Boston Symphony. And this is the final summer of Moritz Gnon's appointment with the Boston Symphony in that position. So Moritz, thanks for taking a few minutes to talk with me about your time with the BSO here this morning.
Thank you so much for having me. That's great.
So let's talk first about this final concert that you're scheduled to conduct. As an assistant conductor, we never know if it's literally the final concert because you might be called in at some point when you're covering another concert for a conductor. But your concert that's scheduled for this season begins with Siegfried Idol by Wagner, and then the last piano concerto by Mozart with Paul Lewis, and the Rhenish Symphony by Schumann. So I guess my first question is, are these pieces you specifically chose, and were there reasons for the choices if they were?
In fact, I suggested Schumann's Rhenish Symphony. It is a piece which has always struck me for its freshness, its happy moments, its passionate emotions alternating with darker moments. I mean, the beginning of the first movement, you know, this expansive, joyful, passionate singing melody will immediately take you on that journey. And then there's a second theme coming, which is, well, for me, is from beyond, is from the realm of the dead almost. So, you know, Schumann, he was a complicated personality in a way, like Gustav Mahler. I conducted Gustav Mahler's first symphony here 2 years ago, which was my debut with the BSO, and now the Schumann Rhenish. In fact, I see some parallels there, but it's beautiful. And the middle movements are more chamber musical, and the fourth movement is a solemn, you know, sort of procession-like, very, very, peculiar movement in a way, where you also hear Schumann's demons, you know. It's a very dark. Then the last movement, the fifth movement, again, very light, and it leaves you, you know, in the most positive spirit after a, you know, energetic and almost heroic ending. And I think Schumann composed this piece in one of the happiest phases of his life. He was with Clara. In fact, you hear a lot of Clara in this, and Schumann's love to Clara in this piece. When he composed it, when he had just traveled to Düsseldorf, which is close to the Rhine River, and so the piece resembles some impressions that Robert Schumann got from this area, but of course most of all the emotional impressions that and feelings that he had during that time. So I actually suggested to do the Rhenish Symphony by Schumann, and I'm very happy that this worked. And I also wanted to combine Schumann with Richard Wagner. You may know that Richard Wagner, I mean, we're opening the program with Richard Wagner's Siegfried Idyll, and Richard Wagner composed a rather expansive opera cycle, the Ring, which sort of is set at the Rhine River. So there's also a link to that. And also Wagner as a composer, I think, was very much inspired by Robert Schumann. They knew each other. There was a correspondence between both of them, and you hear a lot of Schumann's ideas also in Wagner, who of course took it to his own in his own idiom and on a different level than for himself. But also there's an autobiographical thing regarding myself. I conduct symphonic repertoire with the Boston Symphony Orchestra, and I have been conducting a lot of opera in the last years. And you may know that Richard Wagner is one of the most important German opera composers. And I worked at the Bayreuth Festival in southern Germany, in Bavaria, for many, many summers. It's a festival which focuses only on the works by Richard Wagner, and so this music means a lot to me. And I am very, very happy and proud that I get a chance to perform some of Richard Wagner's music with the Boston Symphony.
And there's another connection between these two composers in that Wagner was born in Leipzig and Schumann spent a lot of his time in Leipzig. And so, these composers fit well together. I wonder as well, when you're talking about the Rhine and the Rhenish Symphony, the images, along with the emotions, but you're from southern Germany, I think. Am I correct about that? And so I wonder, is this music that, what place does it hold in that area of the world? Is it sort of held up as something really, really special that sort of belongs to that area of the world a little bit more?
I think, the great composers, they take inspirations from, well, very often from nature. And in Schumann's case, it was the Rhine in this Rhenish Symphony, or the Rhine area, the cathedral of Cologne and these things. However, I think that one may recognize these venues or the particular spot on the Rhine, or the, I don't know, moving of the waves. One may recognize that and see it, but not necessarily. It's not programmatic music. I think it is universal music. It is poetic music. It is every listener, no matter whether he or she has actually been at the Rhine or has seen the Cologne Cathedral, will have a chance to get attached to this music and develop their own relationship with the piece.
Yeah. Now your position as assistant conductor does involve occasionally conducting programs that you have created, that are part of the series of normal concerts the BSO does, but you also spend a lot of time as what is called a cover conductor, where you are on hand to step in if necessary, but also to give a little bit of feedback depending on whether the conductor at the moment wants that. You listen in the hall during rehearsals. You can, give feedback about balances or maybe interpretations sometimes. So I guess what I've wondered about with assistant conductors is whether you can say something about what you learn from being in charge of a concert, like you will in this coming one that you're conducting, versus what you learn as a cover conductor working with someone else who's actually conducting the concert. What kinds of things do you pick up in each of those situations that further your own understanding of this craft of conducting?
I think being in charge of a musical program as a conductor is, of course, a different thing. And you have to learn this part of the job by doing it. Yet there is a lot of preparation that can be done and that should be done to help you being ready, when you actually are there on the podium to conduct. And so what I learned as an assistant conductor is that the good thing is you're prepared, because you might have to step in. So you've heard the music before, you know about the problematic bits, the difficult bits in the scores, and you observe experienced conductors solving those problems. And then you can always, compare what would I have done, what is he or she doing, and oh yeah, that's better, and oh yes, I hadn't thought of that, and yeah, I have to consider this, and da da da. So in the end, when you're on the podium, everything goes really fast. There's not a lot of time for feedback, for contemplation. On the spot, you have to do it. And I think the position of assistant conductor just enables you to learn the repertoire, to develop a sensation of rehearsal technique, and also to observe orchestras, like what kind of problems they might be able to solve by themselves if you just give them another go. These kind of things. And it has been so fruitful and inspiring for me also to observe different kinds of conductors. You know, they are very, very different. I think it helped me a lot to develop my own way.
Yeah. Can you think of specific times when a particular aspect of preparation, or maybe score analysis, or a particular aspect of technique sort of came to you in the last few years here? Are there specific moments that really stand out as some of those we call them in this country aha moments, or light bulb moments, when a light bulb goes on in your mind, you're like, oh wow, I get that?
Well, I have to say, in that respect, I learned so much from Andres Nelsons. It happens so often that I think, oh my God, you know, you have to say this, or you have to say this, or explain this, or repeat this, and he finds a way, which sort of it involves technical aspects, but even more so emotional and human aspects, that just, you know, a good musician, or a group of great musicians as the BSO are, that they will understand. And so he is able to solve, you know, 10 problems in one package. And that's just, I mean, you know, I have many aha moments with him. I still have this. And there's one thing which is in fact very difficult to judge when you're on the podium. It's balance, because the conductor has acoustically the worst place of all people in the room, because you stand there close to the strings. You hear them relatively present and loud. It's not so easy to judge whether the woodwinds come through, whether the brass might be too loud, because you hear the brass louder in the hall very often than you do on the podium. And so for that reason, it's always, I think, good for any conductor to have if he feels like having a feedback from the hall, to get that feedback.
And working with an orchestra like the Boston Symphony is, in one way, very exceptional, because there are very few orchestras of this caliber. I mean, there's a handful. You can argue about which ones, but I mean, maybe 10 or 12 orchestras around the world, maybe, let's just say roughly, that are on the caliber of the Boston Symphony. But at the same time, because of their experience, because of their efficiency of making things happen quickly in rehearsals so they can get to the really important things, what do you feel like you've learned from these musicians in the process of rehearsals, in the process of observing their work day in and day out for a few years now?
Well, what I have learned from them is how fast they are able to bring a conductor's intention to them as a group, and play together as a group, and fixing many, many things by themselves that need to be solved. Also, when people ask questions, they are so aware of all the things that need to be discussed, if something has to be discussed, and they just know exactly which spots they should ask, they should mention if the conductor doesn't do it. They have this incredible energy. They really want to go into extremes, like when it is soft, you know, they really want to play really soft, and if you encourage them to do so, they will appreciate it. And I mean, of course, they are, every single player of the BSO is a virtuoso on the instrument, so there are no limits. And this is something that I had to learn in a way that, you know, that they'll do it, but I have to ask for the right things, and that they'll be able to do it.
Yeah, and so when you go from here to work with another orchestra at any given moment, whether it's with opera in Berlin or Bayreuth, if you're going back there at some point, or anything like that, how do you then take what you've learned about that speed, that efficiency, that knowledge, that awareness, and ask that of another ensemble? Every ensemble will have some level of skills like that, but how does that help you when you step then in front of another orchestra?
I try to treat any orchestra I work with as, you know, great musicians and great professionals, and they, I think everyone does whatever he or she can. Of course, you know, there are smaller orchestras, you know, some at more remote places, and you know, who are not at such a high technical level. But I try to I always demand a lot in a positive way. And if I have to shift a gear back, you know, and a bit slower, you know, then we do it a bit slower. But it's in a way the same thing. Here with a BSO, it's luxury, of course, because the first rehearsal is already on such a high level, like you could almost record it. Whereas when you work with a less skilled orchestra, then there is a little bit more of you know, vacuum cleaning to be or dentistry to be done. But you know that it's always every orchestra is different, and that's a huge challenge for the conductor. You arrive there in the first rehearsal, you don't really know what to expect, and you have to quickly, you know, find out which are the sections that might need more help here and there, and who are the players who will be fine by themselves. And that's a great challenge.
Yeah, and by the sound of your thoughts about Andres and about the orchestra, there's a lot of just, no matter which orchestra you're in front of, building the trust in yourself and in them for everybody to do their best. That's really what the ultimate is for both sides of the podium to develop the trust that brings out the best of what everyone's trying to do.
I think trust is the key word, which is something also I learned from Andres. You always have to trust the orchestra. If there's no trust, there will be no communication, no musical communication. There will be no sense of chamber musical playing. This is something you really have to learn. You know, it comes through experience. Yeah.
Yeah. So this summer here at Tanglewood is a huge celebration of Leonard Bernstein, and I can't resist asking you about your own relationship with Bernstein's music, when it sort of entered your consciousness, what you're learning, even in this early part of the summer, about Bernstein that you hadn't really learned before. What is it that you're absorbing about Bernstein during the last spring, for sure, at the Hall, but also here at Tanglewood this summer?
Well, I have to say, as a conductor, Leonard Bernstein is one of my great idols in a way, because he's in most of the repertoire. I mean, he did everything. You know, having been a composer himself, obviously he was interested in contemporary music, but his repertoire reaches back to Bach. You can see in documentaries that, you know, even though one doesn't associate Bernstein with Bach normally, but he had a huge variety of repertoire, and just a great, you know, musician, and great conductor. And you know, regarding Bernstein's music, you might be surprised, but the first opera I ever conducted was Trouble in Tahiti by Leonard Bernstein. I conducted that in Lisbon, where I was working at the National Opera House for a while. I did it with young singers there, and I loved that so much. So I have so many great memories of that. Of those performances.
Yeah, and so are there particular things you're looking for? Well, Trouble in Tahiti is coming right up here at Tanglewood. Are there other things that you're looking forward to here during the summer that maybe give you a window into Bernstein that you hadn't experienced before?
Oh, very much. I mean, there will be this big Bernstein, how do you say, celebration or
concert? Yeah,
galas, exactly. And we are going to take his serenade on the European Festival Tour, right after Tanglewood, and I'm going to you know, go on this tour with a BSO, which will be really my final, like, 2 weeks, so to say, during my tenure with a BSO, and I'm very much looking forward to the serenade.
Yeah. Well, so tell me, just in terms of the really big picture, for your career, your 3 years with the Boston Symphony, which is the standard amount of time under most circumstances for assistant conductors. What has this done beyond those specific things you've learned with Andras and with the orchestra? Tell me how this will fit into and allow you to build from this in as you continue your own career. What do you have, anything specific that you're moving on to next?
I have engagements mostly in Europe with very good orchestras. I have to say I'm very lucky, and in both opera and symphonic. And 3 years ago, when I started my tenure with a BSO as assistant conductor, I had already launched a career as a, you know, guest conductor in opera. Yeah. So that has always gone sort of parallel to my BSO tenure. And I am so thankful to the BSO, because those last three works opened a door for me into the symphonic repertoire, which I really hadn't had before that. And I love both. I love opera, but to the same extent, maybe even a bit more. I would love to do a symphonic repertoire. And now my career looks good in a way that I can do both now. And there are, you know, things are coming up in both fields, and I'm very much looking forward to that.
Wonderful. Well, I have one last question. And it's just that as someone from Germany who now has spent 3 years largely in the United States, I know you've traveled back and forth a lot to Europe and probably other places too. I just am really curious about your perspective on what you see from your perspective on the relationship of this kind of art form to what you see in American culture largely. Like, how do you feel like orchestral music fits into American culture, maybe in comparison to how it fits into German culture?
Well, I think classical music is a sort of specific field of I hate the term, but let me say entertainment, because obviously there's a relatively small percentage of people who in society who have access to still, and I hope this is going to improve, but who have access to actually learning about classical music. The best is by playing an instrument, singing something like this. So I think, I mean, I haven't read any statistics, and I know too little to say something really, really qualified. But the impression I have is, although the systems of especially of funding arts are so different in Germany and in the United States, I have a feeling that it is the same. It is just the same thing when you gain people's interest into classical music. It is actually very, very easy to keep them there because they will immediately understand that this is just fun. You know, it's fun. It's emotional fun. It's enriching human experience. It is also an intellectual challenge. There's a lot of it. And I think people understand this, you know, in the whole world, and it is just important to do as much as we can to reach people and to attract people, because they will not necessarily grasp that in their in everyday environment.
But I love that idea that it might be hard to grab them, but once they're grabbed, it's easy to keep them. That's a nice way to put it. I love that. Moritz, thanks so much for taking a long time to talk with me about all of this. I really appreciate your thoughts, and I appreciate your 3 years here with the Boston Symphony. Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much, Brian.